Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Kimberly Atkins. If you were out and about on Causeway Street last night, you probably ran into some unhappy folks leaving the garden. That's because just about 4 minutes into overtime in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals last night, this happened.
Came back along to Gunnarsson once more. They've got Sundqvist set up at the opposite circle. Across to Gunnarsson, the shot, he scores! The Blues win it in overtime and have evened the series!
For more on the Bruins, as well as the struggling Red Sox, we're joined by Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start here. That was a tough loss for the Bruins last night against the Blues. What happened?
Yeah, it was an interesting game. It really felt like St. Louis kind of flipped the script. The Bruins in Game 1 came out. They looked like the faster, more talented team. They really kind of controlled the pace of play. As a kind of a snapshot example, in the second period of Game 1, the Bruins outshot the Blues 18-3.
Wow.
So really kind of dominating possession and dictating the pace. Compare that to last night where the Blues just looked like the more motivated team. The Bruins had no shots in overtime. They had five power plays, just three shots on all five power plays combined.
Wow.
So really you saw a Blues team that was deciding what the game was going to look like. They played to their pace. They're a bigger team. They want to play that real kind of grinded out strategy. And really, they just wanted it more. Even the Bruins coach, Bruce Cassidy, said that after the game, talking to reporters.
They seemed to play with more urgency tonight than they did game one. We played with less. What they did is I thought they were on top of us tighter than maybe the first game. Didn't allow us to get to space. As a result, we didn't seem to win as many races as we did game one to pucks.
And so much of hockey comes down to who has that extra motivation, that extra drive to just go a little bit faster, a little bit harder. Last night it was the Blues. Also troublesome, you're not getting anything from your first line. Those are supposed to be your best players. And so far for the Bruins, they call themselves the perfection line. They have been far from perfect.
Right. Well, hockey is physical, but this series has been really physical. Do you expect that to continue?
I do. I talked about it going into the series. These are two teams that really play this kind of old school style. You hear a lot about the new NHL where you've got faster skaters and kind of fancy moves and crisp passes and all that. These are two teams that really kind of throw it back to the old days of grind it out, hits against the boards. And you're starting to see these teams, they look like they don't really like each other. There's all these scrums after the whistles, guys kind of roughing each other up, letting them know, chirping at each other a little bit that, hey, I see what you're doing. I don't like it. You've had a couple of kind of key moments. The Torrey Krug hit from Game 1. A lot of people have been talking about that. He basically gets tackled to the ice, helmet ripped off,
yeah.
And then he bombs all the way down the ice and ends up nailing Robert Thomas from the Blues with an incredible hit. And last night, the Bruins were on the receiving end of a pretty major hit. Matt Grizzlick basically goes into the boards trying to get a puck and gets sandwiched from behind, takes a blow to the head. He goes out with a head injury, and you really saw that left the Bruins with five defenders the rest of the game, and that lack of depth started to hurt them as the game went into overtime.
Yeah, I mean, Grizzlick went to the hospital. Do we know how he's doing?
So Cassidy said today that he's day-to-day, that he's entered concussion protocol, which in the NHL is pretty legit. They have the player rest for an undetermined period of time until they're basically kind of symptom-free. Then they start to exert themselves, work out a little bit, see if any symptoms come forward. After they're able to rest and go through exertion with kind of no symptoms, then they have to meet with the team neuropsychologist and then consult with the team physician or the team trainer. So it's a pretty extensive protocol there. So Grizzlick will not travel with the team today. They made that announcement. And there was some real anger within the Bruins locker room about that hit specifically. For one, David Backes was talking about that postgame with reporters. Here's what he had to say.
I don't think that's a hit we want in our game. I think it's from behind, elevated into his head, into the glass. If that's a two-minute penalty, there's going to be a shortage of defensemen, I think, in the series by the end of it. But that's in somebody else's hands. That's something that I think if I'm making that hit, I'm probably watching from the bleachers for a few. But we'll see what happens with their player.
So he said, we'll see what happens. Is there any word that the league is going to look at that hit?
Yeah, so the player he's talking about, the player who delivered the hits, Oscar Sundquist for the Blues. The NHL Department of Player Safety announced today they are holding a hearing with him to determine whether or not that hit requires some sort of fine or possibly even a suspension. There have been some St. Louis fans that have compared that hit to the Krug hit I mentioned earlier, but really it's kind of apples and oranges. The Krug hit was to a player who was playing the puck. It was in the flow of the game. This hit was up against the wall. You can see kind of high impact to the head area. It slams Grizzlick's head against the glass. And it's exactly the kind of hit that the NHL has really been working hard to get rid of in recent years. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see at least a fine come out of that.
All right. So now the series is tied up 1-1. We have a series. How do you see the rest of it playing out?
So game three is Saturday night. It's a big game, but really the Bruins just need to take one of the next two, I would say, to still be in the driver's seat here. Basically get that home ice advantage back. I still think they're the more talented team, but they really have to capitalize on their chances, and I'd like to see them put more pucks on the net. They didn't shoot a lot in Game 2. You have to shoot to score. I mean, it seems pretty simple, but at the same time, they just weren't doing it. So I would like to see them put more pucks on the net, see if they can get a rebound bounce and get the puck to bounce their way.
And you think that they can pull this off?
I do. I think it'll be a tough fight. I think St. Louis is here to rumble. That was actually the franchise's first Stanley Cup Finals win in franchise history. So they really want it. The city of St. Louis really wants it. But I think the Bruins are the better team ultimately. And I'll tell you, I really hope they pull it off because it's been almost 4 months since we've had a parade here.
That's an eternity here in Boston. All right. For the Boston sports fans that weren't watching the Bruins lose last night, the rest were watching the Red Sox lose like I was.
Yeah, tough night.
Oh, my goodness. Red Sox manager Alex Cora summed it up this way.
We need to play better. You know, I think the last, 12 innings hasn't been good. We haven't pitched well. So we need to be better.
We need to be better is an understatement.
Yeah.
Chris, what is going on? They don't look like world champs.
No, not at all. That really pretty much sums it up. They need to be better pretty much across the board, all aspects of the game. Cora mentioned the pitching there. The pitching's been a huge concern. It was a huge concern coming into the year. They didn't really make any big moves in terms of adding a starter or a reliever. They've dealt with some injuries now. You've got even Steven Wright's had a suspension. I mean, last night was just kind of indicative of what this team has been going through. They lose 14-9 to Cleveland. Ryan Weber probably should have been pulled in the third inning, but Cora basically knows he doesn't have the bodies in the bullpen, so he's stuck leaving him out there, and it ends up looking like the Indians are just hitting batting practice balls and just knocking him around. So I think they're in real trouble here. They headed to New York last night. They got a four-game series with the Yankees. This is, I know that it's only May, but this is actually a huge series for them. They're 7.5 games back in the AL East. We've talked before about why you don't want to be one of those wild card teams. You really want to compete for that division title. And if they lose this series to the Yankees, that's going to be a really big hill for them to climb.
Yeah, Sox and Yankees always feels like the playoffs.
Yeah.
And speaking of the bullpen, Cora doesn't seem like he wants to define those roles. Do we really need a closer?
You know, there's two schools of thought on this. And last year, Cora basically did the same kind of approach, and it worked out great, right? He couldn't do anything wrong last year. But there is an argument to be made for selecting a guy to be the quote-unquote closer, the guy who comes in at the end of the games to shut down the other team. There's kind of a certain mindset you like to see from your closers, kind of similar to goalies in hockey, where you just, they're a little bit weird, right? Remember, Craig Kimbrell was quite a character.
Right.
And so there's something to be said for a guy knowing mentally what's coming next and having the ability to prepare for the situation he's going to enter. But Alex Cora, he's a numbers guy. He's a matchups guy. He likes to read the situation. He likes to see how does this guy do against these three hitters he's probably going to face in this ballpark on a Wednesday night. I mean, he's got incredible amounts of data at his hands. So hasn't worked for him this year. We'll see if maybe he can make a change moving forward.
All right, we'll see. That's Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is Radio Boston.